before we start our meditations and all that, I wanted to see if last time we were talking about Tonglen, right? And how we can use it. So I was wondering if people tried it and did it. Was there any questions or anything interesting happen or any insight that you might have had? I think last time we also had a long discussion about, somebody asked me about what I did when I was facing a particular problem, right? Yeah, that's what it was. So anyway, anybody have any questions or anything otherwise? No? Okay. The class has thinned out some anyway, I can see. Okay. So why don't we, so what I was thinking today is I've pretty much covered all the material, so to speak, you know, what's in the text, you know, the Lamrim, and also what's in the required readings, you know, all the things. Today I was thinking what we could do is I would, you know, I'll finish with what Rinpoche's advice is on how to use compassion in our daily life, right? So that's one thing to talk about, which is not in the text, but it's his advice. I think it's important that we know what it is. Okay. This thing is like you have to actually.
I think it hooks.
Okay.
See, like not that way.
I don't know.
I think
right? Normally
okay.
I put it like this.
It works
right?
Okay.
Isn't that?
Yeah. You've got it coming off the other side.
Oh, okay. Oh God. No. No, that can't be right.
No, okay, then the other one. Yeah, okay, sorry. Get out of your way now. This is too low.
Okay. Is it too low? All right, there we go. So then we can do some meditations, and I guess what we'll do is we won't sit through the entire hour or hour and whatever it's going to take us, right? I'll do one meditation. I'll start with this is general compassion meditation, right? Which we've done, actually. That's one reason why I introduced it a few classes ago, right? So we'll do that again. And then we'll probably take a break, you know, just walk around a little bit. And then we'll do a meditation kind of more specific to using the techniques we've learned in this module, right? In how to use them when we face obstacles, right? So, okay. So let's just take our comfortable posture. So we'll settle our minds after the day by just doing a short breathing meditation. So we can think about our life right now. You know, the kinds of, is it joyful? Do we have problems that we're facing? Maybe we were facing problems recently, so we can think about that. So we can ask the question, why do we face these problems? And the Buddha said that the reason is because we're continuously engaging in grasping. And then, more destructively, self-cherishing. So maybe we can consider the last problem we were facing, or the current problem we're facing. And we can think about where the was it really grasping and cherishing? So we can kind of investigate a little bit. What was our motivation? Was it pure? Without any blame or guilt, of course, just neutral questioning. So we can see that most likely somehow our ego was involved. And we can see how all our daily actions involve the ego. So we can consider our things that we did today or yesterday or day before. Very simple things. And see where the ego was in those actions. So that's the thing that is the root of our problems, the Buddha said. All our actions that are contaminated by the ego, if you will. Constantly creating causes for future problems. So we really have to resolve that we have to get out of this.
how can I get out of this cycle? I'll do everything I can to get out of this cycle. This continuous suffering of birth, old age, problems, sickness, death, over and over again for countless eons, countless lives and countless realms. For what? That's the renunciation we have to really bring up. That we've got to get out of this. And not only that, there are countless beings around us who are stuck in it just like us. They're suffering just like we are. They're continuously engaging in the same behaviors that we engage in, causing future problems. And maybe they don't even know that they're causing future problems. So we have to generate this great compassion for all these beings around us, in this room, in this city, elsewhere, in all the different realms. So that's our Bodhisattva aspiration, that we can help all these beings gain liberation and enlightenment, that they can rise above this cycle. So they're our mother sentient beings. They deserve the same love that we hold for our mother in this life. We depend on them to develop our qualities. It will finally get us out of this cycle. So they're extremely kind to us in that way. Without them, we couldn't get out either. And they've also been our mothers in countless lives. So they deserve the same love and compassion. So at the moment, I'm incapable of relieving the suffering of even one of these beings. Yet, if I achieve enlightenment, then I can free the minds of countless sentient beings and lead them to the greatest peace. Therefore, to help them, I must attain the exalted state of a Buddha. So that's our Bodhisattva motivation. To generate compassion by thinking how living beings constantly experience suffering, even though they have no wish to do so, because they're ignorant of its causes. Or maybe they're too lazy. Even if we know sometimes we're lazy. So I will take on the responsibility to free them from their suffering and its causes. So here we can do the taking and giving, the Tonglen practice. So as we breathe in, we imagine that we take in the suffering and the cause of suffering of other living beings through our nose, through our nostrils. And we can visualize this in the form of black smoke. So all these beings around us, suffering beings. And so we take in their suffering in the form of black smoke. So taking the black smoke, like pluck its, and taking the suffering and its causes, like it says, like plucking a thorn out of their flesh, we immediately free all numberless beings from all their suffering. So all these beings are having their physical problems, mental problems. Problems with their relationships, problems at work, so next taking all the subtle obscurations from the arhats and the higher bodhisattvas. So black smoke comes in through your nostrils and absorbs into a self-cherishing thought in your heart, completely destroying it. the self-cherishing, the creator of all our problems, becomes non-existent. It's like aiming an arrow at the target. The black smoke, the suffering, totally destroys our self-cherishing. So take from others all the undesirable environments that they experience. So, you know, people who are in war zones and refugees, people in, you know, there's so many beings in so many other realms. So we breathe in through our nostrils, again in the form of black smoke, all the undesirable places that sentient beings experience. All those inhospitable environments of the hungry ghosts and hell realms. And of course, in our realm, there's no dearth of people suffering and inhospitable environments. So the black smoke comes in again and goes down into our heart, where it absorbs into our self-cherishing thought and completely destroys it. So at the same time as our self-cherishing becomes completely non-existent, the false I that ignorant holds to be truly existent also becomes completely empty, as it's empty in reality. So that's the ultimate nature of the I. So we can kind of meditate on that for a little bit. The self as we see it, as we think it is not there at all. This thing that rules our life is not there at all. So now we can generate loving kindness for beings by thinking that even though beings want to be happy, they lack happiness because they're ignorant of its causes, or lazy in achieving them or generating them. And even if they achieve some temporary happiness, they still lack the ultimate happiness of full enlightenment. So think how wonderful it would be if all beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. So we will be the wish-granting jewel to bring them that happiness. That's our purpose. So just like a wish granting, like when one wishes something of a wish granting jewel, it comes to be. Just like that, whatever sentient beings want, they imagine or visualize it, we just give it to them. Whatever positive things we have, we give to them. Like, we can give all our good karma of the three times and all the happiness and the results. Our possessions, family, friends, everything that we hold so dear. Our body. So here we can also visualize from the self-cherishing thought in our heart, once it gets destroyed, we give them all the happiness as white light emanating from our heart and going to all the beings. So maybe we can do that for a bit, where we take in the black smoke, that all the suffering of beings pierces our self-cherishing thought, and from there we give them all the happiness that they desire. Really, really try to believe that we actually are able to do it, because that's where the power lies of changing our self-cherishing. Imagine that all those who want a friend get a friend. All those who want a teacher or a guru find one. All those who want wealth find wealth. like that. So we can also think about the other realms, like the god realms and the demigod realms, the hungry ghost realms, so we send them the same light and joy and happiness. Animals, forgot about animals in the animal realm. All the arhats and the bodhisattvas, whatever realizations they don't have, may they gain them. Really rejoice by thinking how wonderful it is that I have the opportunity to do. I'm sorry. That I've been able to bring them happiness in this way. So I dedicate all my merits that I've thus created for the enlightenment of all beings. May I become a Buddha to benefit all. We take a break for maybe 5 minutes, stretch our legs.
Maybe now we should really get started. So I thought that this is a prayer. I'm sure you're familiar with this prayer. This is prayer of Saint Francis, which Rinpoche really likes. Right, so he changed a couple of words in there. But I'd like to read this prayer, so I'll read it to you, right, because it's very apropos. So it says, Lord Buddha, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, unity. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is error, truth. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is sadness, joy. Where there is darkness, light. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled and happiness for the ego as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. It is in having practiced that we are born to eternal life, from happiness to happiness up to full enlightenment. So, that's how, you know, it's a really nice, you know, it's, I grew up in, you know, I don't know, if, I went to Jesuit school, right, and even though I'm not of the Christian faith, but this was in India, so there were Belgian and French Jesuits who ran the school. But in any case, so the, you know, I'm very familiar with this prayer, but it's, you know, it's really, but as an adult, I really hadn't, but I've kind of forgotten about it, you know. So I thought that, you know, it's, so we've talked about, you know, the general, so we've talked about compassion and, you know, like that, like the meditation we just did, Tonglen. You know, it talks about compassion in the general sense, right? All beings and so forth and so on. The really difficult part, and as we have discussed, to transform our problems, we actually, the best way, maybe the only way to transform our problems is to practice compassion. Right, to ourselves and to others. Right, that's the basically the theme of the entire module. Right. The question is that how do we, you know, how do we make the rubber hit the road, right? I mean, how do we kind of remember compassion in our daily life? Because it's very difficult, right? I mean, when we're facing problems, it's very difficult to generate compassion or so forth, you know, all those things, right? So, so what Rinpoche has this, what he calls bodhicitta mindfulness, right? So his advice is that way to familiarize our mind with compassion, right? To always be thinking in that mode, right? Is to continuously, whatever we're doing, thinking about others in that action, right? So what he suggests, for example, you know, every action that we take, convert it to something that's meant for others, even though it's not obviously so. So for example, you know, if you're washing the dishes, you know, you can think, you know, I'm washing the stains, the dirt and the stains from my mind, right? And the mind of all beings, right? So may they, you know, like this, you know, wash their dirt and stain and attain enlightenment, right? Or what he suggests, something like, for example, when you're walking, right, is to always think that all the statues and stupas and scriptures are all on our right, right? So that when we're walking, we're kind of in a way circumambulating, you know, clockwise, right? So there's a reason why the stupa, by the way, is over there. Because if you look at the road goes that way. Rinpoche wanted to, you know, I know that there's somebody who goes that way too. But the closer one, you know, the road goes this way. So it's kind of like going clockwise, right? So, but we can think about, because that was actually one of the considerations when the stupa was going up. So we can think like that, right? So when we're walking, we can think like that, right? You know, some of you may do some advice, for example, when we're doing prostrations is to think, you know, what his advice is, you imagine that you're prostrating, like a mountain, I think he says, right? You're prostrating like a mountain as wide as the earth or as wide as a mountain can be, right? Because you're covering all the earth and all the beings, you know, you're taking them with you, right, in your prostrations, right? So everything we do, make it like that, right? So if we're eating food to, there's the food offering prayer, of course, right? You know, there's the one in Tibetan, but basically, it says, you know, I'm not eating this food out of gluttony, just for myself, right? Back in the old days, I guess they had gluttony. Well, I guess we still have gluttony. We just don't call it gluttony. But, so, you know, I'm not eating this food out of gluttony, but only to nourish myself so that I can be of benefit to others, right? So nourish the body, right? So, so anything that we do, we can convert it to something positive, right? And this is not a new thing, actually, because I was reading a text and I came across this prayer from 5th century, 4th century, I don't know, from this Indian master called Rahula Bhadra. You know, this was actually in a text that I was reading recently. So he writes, it was translated into English by, translated into English, and he writes, on every occasion, pray tirelessly for the benefit of all beings. When you are going to sleep, think, may all beings attain the absolute nature. When you wake up in the morning, may they awaken as Buddhas. When you get up, that means like getting out of bed, may they have the body of a Buddha. I'm not sure where that relationship is. But nevertheless, when you get up, may they have the body of a Buddha. I guess you're rising as a Buddha. That's what it is. Right. You're getting up. You rise. You know, like you rise as a deity. They call you. So you're rising as a Buddha, right? When you dress, may they be clad with the ability to be ashamed to do wrong and show restraint before others. When you start a fire, may they burn the firewood of negative emotions. When you eat, may they eat the food of concentration. When you open a door, may they have access to the city of deliverance. When you close a door, may they close the way to lower rebirths. When you go out, may I take the path of deliverance for all beings. When you go somewhere, may I lead all beings to the higher worlds. When you arrive, may I liberate the beings of the lower worlds. When you see someone happy, may all beings find the happiness of Buddhahood. And when you witness the suffering of others, may all beings be free of suffering. Right? So like that, it's important, you know, so what Rinpoche says, it's important to convert all our, you know, because we take so many actions during the day, right? I mean, countless. You know, little things, right? But they're all, most of them are neutral. There's no positive, nothing positive or negative about them. But if we have, remember, if you remember the teaching on karma, it's all about motivation. Right? It's karma isn't the action, it's actually the motivation behind the action. So, if we have a motivation like this, the action actually can be converted into a positive action. Right? So, I mean, there's, you know, remember the accumulation of merit, we have to create the causes for, you know, if we want happiness, we have to create the causes for happiness. This is a way for every action to contribute to the causes of happiness, right? That's one thing. But the other more profound thing, of course, is that it changes the way we think. So it trains our mind in a sneaky way, right? It trains our mind so that when we do face obstacles, we will be thinking in this way, right? Like my friend, you know, the story of my friend I said, you know, who thought he was dying, right? Who had the, you know, the pain in his abdomen, right? So at the, you know, last moment he thought, you know, so much, you know, how many people must be having the same, this problem, you know, I'm not the only one, may they not suffer like I am, right? May they find happiness. And, you know, he thought he was going to die, and so he didn't come up with that because out of the blue, right? Because he's been doing this, right? He's been thinking like this, right? So that when the time really came, he knew what to do, right? So that's why these things work. Because if we are just, you know, doing a general tonglen once in a while, it has some positive effect, right? I'm not saying it doesn't have any effect. But it doesn't have the kind of power, doesn't have the power that, you know, if we just cultivate these little things on a daily basis, right? On an hourly basis, actually. So that's Rinpoche's advice to all his students. He actually spends a lot of time, I think, last retreat, which was 3 or 4 years ago, I guess. I think he spent like half the retreat, which is like a week, just about, you know, on this topic. And out of that came this book, actually. You know, this book essentially came out of the, you know, first few couple of retreats on, and he spent so much time on it. So, you know, so for example, you know, I'm probably flogging a dead horse, you know, but for example, you know, so that, actually, you know, he says from the very moment you wake up, you know, you think, may all sentient beings achieve the holy body of a Buddha. Right? He says, when you rise from bed, may all sentient beings rise up from the great oceans of suffering. When you get dressed, may all beings clothe themselves with shyness and shame, which is what this, you know, the other prayer was saying. When you tie your belt, may all beings be bound by the three higher trainings, you know, ethics, concentration, and wisdom, right? So those are the three higher trainings. When you release your belt, may all sentient beings be freed from the bondage of delusion and karma. When you lie down in bed, I will bring all sentient beings to a sorrowless state. Yeah, lying down in bed is kind of like, you know, at death, right? So that's like, you know, so kind of like bringing them to a sorrowless state. As you go to sleep, may all sentient beings achieve the Dharmakaya. Actually, that's a good, that's also another advice that he gives about going to sleep. Right? So he has, remember we talked about what to do when we get up. Right? You know, how wonderful I have another day. May I, whatever I do today may be of benefit to others. Right? So that was his advice when we get up. Right? So he has advice for going to sleep. So sleep, you know, sleep in, I don't know if they made the, Don may talk about it in the intro to Tantra class, because this is kind of a little Tantra related. But sleep is, you know, the states of mind that we go through when we go to sleep are the same states of mind that we go through when we die. Except it happens in the opposite order. Okay, and I'm not going to go into the detail of all the states of mind and the order, etc., but just know that, you know, if you want to know more about it, there's lots of things, well, there's some things written about it. So, but anyway, so it's the same process as when we die, but it's in the opposite order. So, and as you know, the state of our mind at death governs to a great degree the type of future rebirth we're going to take in the next life, right? That has a big impact, right? I mean, of course, our previous karma does too, but the immediate state of mind right at death has a, I don't know how, what percentage of the impact, but, you know, it's a big impact. So Rinpoche, you know, so one of the things Rinpoche says is that it's very important to know what, you know, prepare for that, right? That's one thing to do, and to prepare for death is one of the big things to do in this life, right? Because, you know, we all want a happy rebirth so that we can continue to make progress, right? Otherwise, we can't make progress. So at the end of our life, it's very difficult to bring up compassion and all these things, you know, because we're in pain usually, you know, or we may not be, have our mental faculties as much. And so it's, you know, to bring up all the stuff is difficult. In fact, even great lamas, actually, you know, I heard of one, you know, and he said, I can't, you know, I'm in so much pain that my mind is not, cannot bring up all those things that I have trained for, right? But what he did do, this lama, is that at the time of death, all he could think about, the only thing he could bring to mind, was the image of a Buddha. Image of the Buddha, right? The historical Buddha, right? I mean, that same posture back, you know, back there, the lotus posture. And so one of the things Rinpoche says is that when we go to sleep, to always try to think some, you know, to have a positive image in our mind, right? So that we can train our mind for when we die, that we can, you know, we know what to do. It will be automatic for us, right? So, you know, you can use compassion, you can use, you know, these kind of things. Or the other, or for example, what he said was, you can just take, you know, imagine, just memorize the picture of a Buddha, right? You know, from some image from somewhere, wherever, right, that you like. And you basically just, as you're going to sleep, just keep that in your mind, right? So that it's basic, as your mind basically descends into, you know, sleep, that's the last thing that you have in your mind, right? So that's the advice he gives for going to sleep. And I try to do that most nights. The other thing he mentioned is that, you know, you go to the sleeping posture, you know, I'm saying this, mentioning this just because Rinpoche mentioned this. I don't actually do this, but I should. But in any case, the sleeping posture is like to go to sleep is like the Buddha when he died, right? When he passed away, which was, if you see the reclining body of a Buddha, it's always on the right side. He's on his right side, left leg on the right, right? And with his right hand over his left and under his, you know, like this, right? So that's what Rinpoche also suggests, to go to sleep in that posture. I don't know why. Maybe, well, it can't hurt, I guess. I mean, it's sort of advice. I'm sure it doesn't hurt. But maybe when you die, maybe that will be the posture in which you die as well. You know, I don't know, right? Maybe that's another reason to do that. So yeah, so that's the advice he gives about sleep. Yeah. Any questions? Okay. So, you know, I'm not going to go through all this. I mean, you can look it up. You know, this text is out there. But the most important thing is to kind of remember at every moment to try to, you know, keep compassion in our minds, right? Because as we discussed, even though it's counterintuitively, that is what's going to help us when we are suffering. It will lighten the load, certainly, right? I mean, it may not remove suffering very soon yet, but it will lighten the load, right? There was something else I was going to... Right. Okay. So why don't we do one more meditation? Right? And this one is more about... more specific to what we have been discussing in this class. Right? So let's take our posture again and... set our motivation that all these beings in all these different realms, our friends, our families, our enemies, everybody suffering, physical pain, emotional pain, so we dedicate ourselves to bring them all to ultimate happiness. So bring to mind the biggest problem in your life right now. Maybe it's with a different relationship. Maybe it's disharmony at work. Maybe we suffer from self-confidence. We don't have self-confidence. So many things. So feel the discontent of the unhappy mind. So we can look at this situation from the aspect of using guru devotion, for example. Like, if the Buddhas appear, or the enlightened beings appear to us in the form that can be of most benefit to us, or the way to teach us, then could the situation also be like that as a teacher? Can we look at the situation like that? Something that's a catalyst for our practice. Maybe our teacher is testing our ability to have a compassionate mind.
And we can also use renunciation, for example. So we can think, as long as I'm in samsara, under the influence of karma and delusions, this is what I should expect. There's no reason to think anything different. Do I really think that I'm not supposed to have any problems? It is the nature of samsara. I'm kidding myself if I think that there will be happiness in samsara. Or, we're not talking about temporary happiness here, but ultimate happiness. So this problem is a perfect reminder that there is no purpose to stay in samsara. Without this problem, I might be deluded into thinking that happiness in samsara, or the happiness in this life, is actually possible. So I can use this situation as an opportunity to attain the pure state of liberation. With this problem, I'm reminded of my shortcomings, my inability to be happy in the face of challenges. It helps me to reduce my pride in helping me to generate a true mind of renunciation, without which I can never be free. So I'm actually quite lucky that I have this problem. I'm also not the only one experiencing this problem. There are countless living beings with the same problem right now. The same frustration, pain, depression, feeling trapped, physical problems, mental problems. So I'm not the only one with this problem. So if I'm suffering so much because of this, they must be really suffering too. Not only that, I have the benefit of the Dharma. I know why I suffer. And I have the remedy, the tools, to free myself. Not just this life, but forever. All I have to do is make effort. But the other beings who are not only sometimes they don't realize they're suffering, but they have no idea why they are suffering. They don't know about suffering, the natures of suffering, the causes. They don't know how to stop it. So they suffer and suffer without any understanding of why. So they're in great despair. And then we can think that on these other realms, there's, you know, the animal realm, hungry ghost realms, the hell beings, they would trade that life for an instant of our problem. My problem is like this blissful happiness in comparison to their sufferings. And not only that, our problem will be gone with the end of this life, but in the other realms, their suffering lasts for so long. And they have no way out. Such a terrible situation to have to endure. We can look at it also from the angle of karma. So we can think that others did not create this problem for me. I am the one. I created this problem. I created the causes that is now ripening at this as this problem. Just like all the positive things that are in this life are the causes, are the results of positive actions in previous lives. just like that, our suffering is a cause, is a result of negative causes. And those other beings are causing me harm, are creating so much negative karma and for future suffering. I'm at least exhausting my negative karma with this suffering. So it's extremely sad that they're going to go through so much pain in the future. We can also look at it from the emptiness perspective. So we can ask ourselves, why is this a problem? Is this a problem? Was this problem there before my mind labeled it as a problem or perceived it as a problem? Is it possible that somebody else in this situation, in this story, might have a different perspective and not see this as a problem at all? If the problem truly existed, it would have to be real, lasting, and permanent. Is it like that? We can also look at the where our self is in this problem. So bring up the self where you feel angry, that makes you feel angry, or the self that feels angry or jealous or hurt. So see if you can feel that self rising. So we can examine that self. Where is it? It feels so real, it must be somewhere. Is it my body? Or is it in my body? Doesn't feel like it. Is it my body? I think we'd all say no, that's not how we feel about the self either. Is it my mind and my body? No, because we say myself, so it's outside, it's more than just the body and the mind. Or rather, we say my body, so the self owns the body, so it can't be the body. Or the mind. Is it outside the body? If so, where? So if it's in none of these places, then where is it? It feels absolutely real. So we see that self really, and there are many other ways we can also look at the self, that we can see that it doesn't exist like the way we think at all. It's a delusion. Or a hallucination, as Rinpoche says. And that's the self that has constructed the problem. So we have this problem due to the false understanding of the self. Not just this problem, every problem. And we continuously feed the self. So from now on, I won't allow this self to hold me trapped. And believing in the appearance of problems as problems. By remembering my teacher, the shortcomings of samsara, bodhicitta and emptiness, I would transform the appearances of problems, maybe even into happiness.
So those are, you know, those are the basically the what we talked about, right? All the techniques on how to look at our lives. And really go deep and examine it, right? And we, and you know, all these techniques really do work if we actually apply them. It's hard to apply them. I won't deny you that. But it makes, if it becomes easier if we do those little things, you know, like Rinpoche's advice, right? If we remember to do those, it becomes easy. Easier, at least. So that's the thing to remember. Also, the thing I'd suggest is, you know, every day, if you're able to just, you know, if you have, you know, okay, actually, one of the advices, of Rinpoche and Geshe-la, by the way, is to memorize the 8 verses that we have been discussing, right? The 8 verses of thought transformation. To memorize it, right? It's only 8 verses. It's actually pretty quick to memorize it. An easy way to memorize it, by the way, I found the easy way to memorize it, actually not to make an effort in memorizing it, but rather every morning just get up and read it once. And by the first month, you will have it memorized, you know? So you don't even have to make much of an effort. In any case, so if you go, you know, just read it once every day, it keeps it fresh, right? How to use the Dharma in our daily lives, because that's what it's about, right? And the other advice that Geshe-la and of course Rinpoche also always gives is every day, every morning if possible, but every day, read just anything from the Lamrim, right? A page. That's it, right? You know, pick it up, read a page, wherever it is, you know, you just can even do that, right? I mean, it doesn't matter, really, because it's all connected, right? Every page is basically saying the same thing as all the other pages are saying. They're all connected, right? But it's better to kind of like go in sequence, obviously. So, yeah, to read something from the Lamrim every single day, or the 8 verses, that's also basically the Lamrim in 8 verses, right? And do some kind of bodhicitta motivation or meditation every day, you know. And if you can, and if you're able to, you know, do the short emptiness thing, right? The emptiness meditation, right? About the self, or however you do it. There are lots of, you know, guided meditations online, and you can read them as well. And the reason that bodhicitta motivation is clear, right? Meditation, right? Helps our lives, etc. But the reason to do an emptiness, just, you know, even though we have very little understanding of emptiness, right? Rinpoche says, do one anyway, right? Because it creates the seeds, right, for the development of emptiness. So it creates an attraction and the seed. Remember, everything has to, you know, the seed has to be there for anything to ripen. So if we want to realize emptiness in some time, in this life or future lives, we have to create the causes for it, right? And so to just do this emptiness, read something about emptiness, contemplate, you know, what you read, do a little meditation for a minute, 2 minutes, right? That's all it takes, right? So, for example, I'll give you an example. You know, do you know the verse from the Diamond Cutter Sutra? Like a star, a visual aberration, a flame of a lamp. You know, anyway, it's, you can look it up. It's very famous. Just look up like a star. You know, I'm sure on Google search, I'm sure like within the first page it'll come up. That's basically that's essentially a verse to remind, you know, to think about how all the different ways one can think about emptiness. And if you want to know how, then, you know, I can refer you to, you know, text or whatever. But so what I do is, I basically, if I don't have time to do a meditation, I basically read that or actually I haven't memorized, I just think about it. And that essentially 30 seconds or a minute, you have some contemplation, right? That's all it takes. But we have to do something like that, you know, continuously to kind of feed it, right? Because we feed so many negative things all the time. We feed ourselves, right, all the time. So we have to counteract it by doing something like that, these kinds of things, right? So his advice is, you know, set the motivation, you know, how wonderful it is having all those things, right? Do something, read something from the Lamrim, you know, see if you can do something about bodhicitta, something about emptiness, and just remind yourself about bodhicitta mindfulness, right? During the day, all these things that you do, how can I remind myself about compassion, bodhicitta, thinking about others, right? And if you can do that, and you know, that all those four things in the morning, the meditations takes 10, 15 minutes. You know, we're not even talking a lot of time here. So if you can do that, you will see progress. You really will. You have to kind of, in the beginning, just kind of do it on faith in a way, right? In a hopefully educated faith, not just blind faith. But you'll see how much the benefit you get, and then it becomes, you know, then it becomes, you see the benefit and it becomes real. You know, you just realize the benefit, you know, or then it becomes easy, right? You want to do it then. And you realize that if you don't do it, then it's actually, you know, your day doesn't go as well, you know? So that's when you know you're really making progress. So so that advice, if you follow Rinpoche's advice, if you follow Geshe Lo's advice, it will be of benefit and it will transform your problems. So that's the way to remember, right? So if we can do those things, I really encourage you. I also encourage you to come on Saturday. Remember Sakadawa, the puja, lots of, you know, accumulation of merit. You don't have to take the precepts. You know, I gave you the spiel, but you don't have to take the precepts. But come for Saturday for Sakadawa because it's a, you know, very auspicious day. You know, if you want to create seeds for future growth, that's it. I also encourage you, if you want more advice, to approach Geshe Lo, right? Geshe Lo is very approachable. You know, you just set up an appointment with him and go to his house or meet him out here or whatever, right? And ask him for advice. What should I do? Right? And follow the advice. So, anyway, that's it. Right? I hope, you know, that it was of some benefit, you know, the class. And I'll see you soon, I'm sure, right? Okay. Let's finish with any questions? Okay. So let's finish with our prayer from page 235 in our prayer book. And we'll just do the first two verses. So due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. Thank you very much.